Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The steal by Iverson! Posting in! He won the game! He won the game!
There to say absolutely nothing from Scott.
Yes! Do you love this game?
Love this game, Zoo. That is for sure. Welcome to Sixers Talk, brought to you by Wilmington University. WilmU Works, Danny Pommels and Paul Hudrick here. Thank you for subscribing at NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep those five-star ratings coming, as well as those comments, thoughts, suggestions, questions. And not many questions for the Sixers after these two victories. They beat the Spurs. They beat the Heat handily. We are recording this podcast after Jimmy Butler got booed out of the building. I thought it was a bit much. I'll be honest.
I saw your tweet.
I took some vitriol from that.
I was surprised a little bit.
Every
how
time
much
he touches the ball, though?
Yeah, I mean, that's Philly, man. How long have you lived here, Danny?
But let's use our discretion on who we boo and who deserves that type of treatment. J.D. Drew, yeah. Ty Domi, yeah, I get it. But you booing Jimmy Butler, a dude that hit two game winners for your team, was trying to usher you through to the championship. It just didn't work out. And we don't even know if that was his fault or the team's fault.
Might have been everybody's fault.
Yeah, so
it might have just in reality, it might have not been anybody's fault. It might have just been a bad fit.
Bro, this guy got happens in life. Unlimited cup of booze. He got the overflowing.
He did.
The full, you know, when you get that big pitcher of beer that sits in the middle of your table with the tap. And
Danny, you know, you were showing me pictures of pizza earlier. Now you're talking about beers.
I'm talking
your
language. I'll talk. That touches your buttons. That triggers you because you are a beer aficionado. But I thought it was a bit much with the booing. I just thought, every time he touches the ball, is you save that for the betrayer. You save that for the Benedict Arnold guy.
I think some people view him that way. I, as a person who covered him, as a person who's still covering this team, I don't necessarily see him that way, but I get why some fans might. It's like this. He chose not to be in Philadelphia. That's the way some people see it. Right. They see it as he didn't want to be here. He wanted to be in Miami. He wanted to be in Miami all along. He forced his way. He just wanted to get out of Minnesota, so he didn't care. And Philadelphia, it was almost like he was just like
a conduit.
We were like his rebound. You know what I mean? Like that's what it was like. He was out of a long term relationship.
Can we say that on this podcast? I just said it, so we can say it.
Well, that doesn't mean we can say it. But no, it was like the Sixers. That's how some people, I think, view it. They view it as some people were looking at it as a long-term relationship with Jimmy. They were looking at it as a marriage, if you will, going forward. And he viewed it as, I just need to get out of Minnesota and now just to get to where I wanted to go eventually to Miami. I'm not saying that's exactly right. I'm not saying that's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
and but that's how I think. And I'm kind of trying to put my head into the brain of how fans are thinking. And I think that's why the fans who boo, I think that's how they view it. They view it as he chose not to be in Philadelphia. He did not pick us. You know what I mean? I think that's where it comes from.
The Twitter poll that Zoo had was, will you cheer Zoo as in Mark Zumoff? Will you cheer, will you boo, or will it be a mixture of cheers and boos? And I think a mixture of cheers and boos is what I expected.
I was expecting a mixture as well.
Because that's what anybody would get. But what no one anticipated was consistent booing. I mean, every time he touched a rock, I think that as sharp and attentive as Sixers, as a fan base period, a Philadelphia fan is well-versed in how games are played. They understand nuances and scenarios. So to use our energy as an intelligent fan base on Jimmy Butler over and over again, I just thought it was excessive. It was petty, at the very least.
You and I both like petty, though.
I like a little petty.
You and I both like some petty.
This caught me off guard.
I'll say that the intro, I expected he would get a little bit warm. Like, I knew the boos were going to outweigh it, but I expected a little bit warmer of an intro. I did anticipate that every time he touched the ball, he was going to get booed.
Wow, I wish you had told me that.
Oh, no, I knew that was coming.
I wish that had been a primer for
us. I thought it was going to be more in the intro, 60 boos, 60% boos, 40% cheers. That's what I was anticipating. It wound up being like 80-20.
Yeah.
If not, it might even been like 90-10. Like, it was, you could not hear cheers.
I don't know if I heard anybody cheer, but our esteemed producer, Pickup Truck Chuck, a.k.a. Steve Graham, had an incredible shot of Jimmy Butler coming out of the tunnel, and when he made his appearance onto the court, the boo started there, and Butler kind of smirked.
He loves it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
He relishes
playing the role
of
the villain.
He loves it. And I don't even begrudge Jimmy that. Like, he just loves it. It's so funny because Michael Lee, who does an outstanding job as a columnist for The Athletic, he talked to Jimmy earlier this week. I'm sure you saw there's that quote that was going around, him talking to Jimmy, talking about Embiid and talking about Philly and talking about all that. And he kind of said, like, you know, I always want to be in the bad guy. And it's like, man, you kind of always make yourself bad. And I don't for the most part, I got along. I've never had a personal issue with Jimmy Butler at all. When he was here, I never got like a bad answer to a question or anything like that ever. So I don't really hold anything personal against him, but he
had a scavenger hunt for the Sixers team staff.
I don't mean, when I say bad guy, I don't mean like a bad human being. I don't think he's a bad person.
No.
Like, no, that's not what I'm getting. But when I say like bad guy, I mean like with the Chicago situation and Derrick Rose, that all didn't end pretty. Then he gets into Minnesota. Then the Minnesota situation was unbelievably ugly.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I wrote today about Jimmy ahead of the game. I don't know if you remember this.
Check out Paul's work on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com.
Yes, you can. Thanks, Danny. I don't know if you remember this, but when that saga was going on in Minnesota, he had a quote that was, of course, near and dear to my heart.
How'd it go?
So he quoted Harvey Dent, who would later become Two-Face, in Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight. He said in the great quote of, "You either live long enough, or you either die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain." And he quoted that. And it's like, you know what? In retrospect, I don't think he could have picked a more perfect quote for himself.
And for those that don't know, Paul Hudrick is a big Batman lover.
That's
so
true.
He probably has a lot of Batman knowledge and has forgotten more than any of us know. But I think also the thing for me is that the best player on the Sixers team, Joel Embiid, loves the dude. He is great friends with him. So that softens how I feel about Jimmy Butler. Like, I'm with Joel. You know, you see him shimmying. You see him egging the crowd on. Like, if you don't love Joel Embiid or enjoy his personality and who he is and you're from Philly or live in Philly, just go ahead and move. Because this dude is capturing the fan base in a way that I think we've all wanted a guy like that. Like, someone who can dominate in their sport and also gets it as far as the personality and what, like, that's the Charles Barkley, you know, probably a bad example because of the way he's been being viewed in the media right now. But that's the love affair we have with those type of Jim McMahon characters or people who kind of go against the grain, have the great personality or what have you,
and can dominate.
Yeah, Allen Iverson. There we go. Great example. So I just think that if Joel likes him, I like him type of thing. But we're getting a little bit away from the game. We can talk about Jimmy Butler like that off the top of this podcast because the Sixers stomped the Miami Heat on Andrew Toney's birthday, I might add.
Ah.
The Boston Strangler, they choked out the Miami Heat, and the 113-86, your final. Something that came up I want to get your thoughts on is that Josh Richardson missed two games, came back, destroyed his former team, 6 of 7 from 3, 11 of 15 from the floor, 32 points, and the Sixers got off to an incredible start. Were up 20 at halftime, went wire to wire in this one, and Furkan Korkmaz didn't play a minute. So as people were drawing the inference,
that's where you're going.
People were drawing the inference that Furkan didn't play. Sixers stomped them.
Oh, I can't go that far.
But at the same time, just kind of just a little bit of housekeeping, because for those people who didn't watch the game or didn't know, Furkan was out because he sprained his ankle. It was precautionary because I guess it wasn't that bad, But obviously, who cares if Furkan's playing or not if you got Josh Richardson back?
And I think if anything, when you watch this game and look at the last two, especially that Knicks game when they really struggled at times defensively and, you know, had times kind of struggling to get it going, you see what Josh Richardson can do for this team.
Yeah, they lead.
He is. Yeah. Brett Brown, to his credit, has said from the onset, like, he feels like Josh Richardson is the guy. He called him a connector. Connects the dots for the starting lineup and said that he's a mortar. Holds it all together. But you can see it. You see what he's saying, though. Because he can just fit so in a lineup where you have guys that kind of are trying to fit together.
Yeah.
He can kind of fit anywhere. He could do kind of anything. He could play essentially play and guard three separate positions on the court, one through three. He can guard pretty well. He can handle the ball as a point guard. He can play the off guard.
And, bro, the game come to him. It's not like he erupted
tonight
for 32 because he was forcing the issue. It was all in the flow of the game.
And what did they run in the second half a lot with him, Danny?
Pick and roll.
They sure did. Yeah. And what happened?
He went nuts. He abused them.
He is a pick and roll player. They have guys who can run pick and roll.
And you were there pregame. And I'm not sure if it was your question in Brett Brown's press conference, but it was your question. It was your question.
Look at me asking good questions.
Because you asked about his defense, I think.
And I did.
Brett was like, "Nah, actually, it's him as a ball handler that we miss the most because he kind of can fit in those little cracks and kind of can create and has that live dribble and can get to the basket and whatnot." And we saw that 200% it come to fruition in the game.
Yeah, a guy that can just do things like, yeah, the term Brett Brown loves to use is the live ball, just off the dribble, just being able to handle the ball, run, you know, navigate screens and pick and rolls, navigate dribble handoffs. He's really, really good at that because he's so quick and because he can, you know, get skinny. Again, another Brett Brownism. He gets skinny, you know, in the cracks of the defense and can penetrate. He's also a very good mid-range shooter. Mm-hmm. Something that Al Horford brought up after the San Antonio game, and Al Horford, by the way, excellent tonight.
Yeah.
He brought up something interesting in that.
He's due for one, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he was good against San Antonio as well. He did. He had a good night against San Antonio, too. But what he brought up after the game is the mid-range. The analytics say, and listen, I don't know, however you feel about analytics, whatever. Analytics say the best shots, three-pointers, and basically dunks. Like, those are your best shots, right? The mid-range has kind of been kind of killed. But when you have a Josh Richardson, and when you have an Al Horford who, and even a Tobias Harris, who are very good at that, they're very good in the mid-range. And when maybe you're not, when the paint is crowded and you're not an elite three-point shooting team, it doesn't hurt you to occasionally look to the mid-range to get some looks. You don't want to live in there. But look what Al did tonight, that elbow and elbow extended range. Al loves that shot. That is his area of the floor, and they're starting to find ways to get him the ball there and get him good looks, and he's knocking them down. And you're sort of kind of starting to see this team turn a corner a little bit offensively to me.
I think it's the chemistry, bro. Joel and
absolutely
alluded to that, and a lot of storylines with the team, particularly after playing a back-to-back against one quality opponent. The Spurs have lost 8 straight at last check, but
they did. They broke it. Did they break it today? I think they might have broke it today. Doesn't matter.
But point being is that Joel Embiid said, "To heck with all this low management nonsense."
Is that what he said?
He called it BS is what he called. And he said BS, so no need to bleep anything. But he called it BS. He played in his first back-to-back of the season. The actual team approach was that they reevaluated him after the San Antonio Spurs game. He played about 27 minutes in that game, I believe. And now here, obviously, they didn't need him at all through the fourth quarter. He ends up logging 26 minutes?
Just under 26.
Yeah. So I think that's another point. Joel Embiid brought up the fact that, you know, with the load management, it takes me away from the chemistry and camaraderie of the team. He says, so, like, I forget about that. And I hosted Sixers pre- and post-game with Coach Lynam, and he made a good point. He said he thought that 10 games he missed after the All-Star break last year, made it so he was off his game, kind of out of rhythm, not quite himself through the rest of the season because he was still trying to play catch up to get back to where he was before the All-Star break. So I thought that was a good point because we saw the issues, you know, whether it was, you know, some people wanted to point to the health, me, and what he ate, and his conditioning and things like that. But if you think about, you know, rhythm and consistency and camaraderie and chemistry, and you take 10 games away from somebody and the team kind of gels without you, you kind of have to work your way back in. So I'm just making a point that I think the load management thing, Joel has a point with that, that I think the Sixers' job is to, if he's going to be able to, if he's going to play in back-to-backs or play, you know, more than 60 games or what have you, which is pretty typical for an NBA center, they're going to have to just limit his minutes as opposed to not playing him at all.
Yeah, and we talked about that a lot before the season started. We said that's the way to have him play more games, just have him play less minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, when you, and it helps when, you know, the San Antonio game wasn't a blowout, but they were it was comfortable. They were up the whole time. That game never felt like it was in doubt.
Right.
Tonight they kicked the crap out of the Heat, so that helps. You get them out of there early. But there is, I mean, Coach Lanham's spot on with that assessment of, yeah, he just looked rusty and sluggish when he came back. And it's just this balance because it's all of it, you know? It is the health. It is the load management. It is the shape. It is the rhythm.
You're looking at it as like a puzzle, like each piece.
Yeah, it's all a factor because you don't want to – I understand his point of like wanting to keep a rhythm, but this is a guy who's had issues staying healthy. And last year, the reason why he missed 10 games at the All-Star break is because he had knee tendonitis because he played in 54 of the first 58 games last year.
Right.
So it's a balance. I get it. You don't. If you're Joel Embiid, of course you don't want to not play. Like,
yeah,
you're a friggin' professional basketball player.
Yeah.
Of course you don't want to not play. You want to play every game. But he has to understand the reality of it. And this conversation's not going anywhere. We're going to be having it all season because there's going to be games where he's not going to play. And it's going to be because load management. So everyone just gear up for it because it's not going anywhere. Just because Joel Embiid called the BS one night doesn't mean it's going to magically go away. There's going to be back-to-backs where he doesn't play. This scenario was one where they played a national – I mean, I hate – but this is the reality. They played a national game on Friday night. They played Jimmy Butler Saturday. There was no way he was going to sit those games. From, you know what I mean? But you better believe that if they're playing – you know, the Milwaukee Bucks one night, and then the next night they're playing Charlotte. He's not playing versus Charlotte. You know, no, but seriously, like that's, and I think he should understand that. I think we can all understand that. Like, why would you, you know what I mean? Like, that's the time to get him the rest. So it is a balance of everything. There, when you watched him over the last week, and Brett Brown talked about a post game, his decision making the last couple games, making quick decisions, making smart decisions, getting double teamed and getting the ball out. He's been so much better at that. Not turning the ball over, just been night and day from the beginning of the season till now. And yeah, he's played those games. He's gotten that rhythm. He's building that chemistry. Like, this is the best game that we probably saw the trio of Josh Richardson, Al Horford, and Tobias Harris play. I don't think it's a coincidence that it comes with Joel Embiid playing a more under control, more disciplined, better decision-making type of game. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think him doing that is creating better ball movement, better spacing, and it's helping everyone else out on the floor.
Yeah, man. I mean, they were due for a blowout, man. They were, and never thought it would come against a Heat team that came in at 11-3, winners of five straight. They did have a quick flight from Chicago to Philly. Probably got in late, and that probably helped benefit the 76ers.
Sure.
But
not that they worked that hard in that game.
Sixers, they stomped.
They did this to the Bulls.
Yeah. Sixers winners are four straight now as they take on the Toronto Raptors coming up on Monday.
Mm.
We can talk about that in a minute. But I'm curious, though, as you were watching the game, Ben Simmons plucks Kendrick Nunn and goes the other way. Did you feel like I don't know if this is going to be a close one?
Not that early.
When did you feel? Was it the Myers Leonard dunk when Joel took Myers Leonard baseline?
Yeah, I think that's
when he started egging on
the
crowd.
Like, and
at what point did you feel like, oh, this one's getting out of hand? Let me start writing my story.
Yeah, no, I it's hard for me to think of like an exact play. It was just a buildup of it. And I think it was when I just saw what, and we haven't even said his, I don't think we've said his name yet, but what Ben Simmons did defensively tonight. That I know that that score sheet says 4 points.
Yeah.
That might have been the best 4-point performance I've seen a guy have in a long time. The Miami Heat's offense is this. Jimmy Butler, here's the basketball. Go create and get the ball to our shooters on the perimeter. Ben Simmons made sure that did not happen tonight.
What are they, third in the NBA in 3-point shooting? Were they?
I think coming in, yeah, I think coming in they were third.
Okay.
So and they go 6-24 tonight, and they went 1-10 in the first half. Mm-hmm. So
I don't think their second leading scorer, Kendrick Nunn, I don't think he scored until the second half.
He did not have a good game.
Right.
Duncan Robinson 0-for-6 as a starter.
I think he hit 9 threes against the Bulls.
He did, Duncan Robinson. Yeah. No, he's shooting like 42% from three, and he's taking a bunch. So I mean, yeah, they really kept Ben Simmons really kept Jimmy Butler in check, and I really think that screwed up the flow of their entire offense all game. When you look at Ben Simmons over the last few games, defensively, he has been.
First team All NBA right now.
Honestly, right now,
starting defense.
It's so early to say that, but man, Danny, I can't. It's hard for me to disagree with you. He has been that good, and there is just a. There is something about him recently that he is just influencing the game without scoring. And, man, if the scoring also comes along with that at some point. And here's the thing. When you see all these numbers, when you see Josh Richardson 32, Joel 23, Tobias 19, Al Horford 16, Ben doesn't have to score. He just has to facilitate. He has to push the ball up the floor at the other end to put pressure on the other team. And he's got to play the elite defense that we saw him play today. If he's doing that, and these guys can score at a reasonable – because, like, these numbers – yeah, Josh Richardson, 32, that's a big night. But, like, Joel, 23, Tobias, 19, Al Horford, 16. None of that is eye-popping. You know what I mean? So if they can just produce like they have tonight and Ben Simmons does – like, this starting lineup just has – man, they have a lot of potential.
And you got to give credit to Josh Richardson because, you know, we talked about it all summer here on the podcast. His defense allows Ben to be able to roam more, not have to guard the best player all the time. And when they're both locking down dudes on the perimeter, it just is a catalyst for, like, everything they do. Ben's being elite defensively. He's elite in transition, going downhill. And I wish he would stop jumping and passing the ball so much. But
he does do that an awful lot, yeah.
But all the same, it didn't matter what they did. Against the Miami Heat.
Are they the best? I mean, you have to stay. They're the best defensive backcourt in the NBA, right? Is there a better one? Unless you, I mean, with, I don't, you can't
no,
really.
Say Paul George and Kawhi. I guess but they're not a backcourt.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, yeah. They're perimeter guys. I mean, I guess if you want to go there because they can guard ones. Hey, so, I mean, hey.
Neither of those dudes are 6'10, though. And Ben
yeah.
is every.
Well, I mean, that. I guess you could theoretically say Pat Bev and one of them, but they don't, they start, I don't know, whatever.
What
but
did Brett say when he if uncoils?
Not,
when
he
Ben
uncoils.
Hey, we want to tell you dreams come into reach at Wilmington University. WilmU helps working adults reach their career goals through accredited and affordable degrees and certificates. To reach new heights in your field, WilmU works. Find out why at wilmu.edu.
A really good Brettism.
What?
That was dropped that I hadn't heard yet.
Horses for courses?
That's the GOAT. That's the all-timer. But he was talking about Tobias wanting him to have a scorer's mentality, and then he said... He said he's not a pig score, which I guess is a way of him saying he's not a ball hog.
Oh, like pig, like horse?
Like the animal pig.
Oh, like yes. Like a hogging the ball.
Yes.
Got you.
I never pig heard score. That phrase though, right? A pig yeah. score? I've never heard that terminology.
I was thinking pig like horse, like P-I-G.
But how does that fit?
That doesn't fit at all. But that's the first thing that popped into my head.
First thing I thought was like saying hog, like ball hog.
I know, but... we need him to be aggressive, though.
No.
Maybe not a ball hog.
That's no, but Brett, that was.
There's a fine line there.
No. Yeah. And Brett said he's not that, but I just need him to be more aggressive. With that said, last two games, Tobias has been significantly more aggressive.
Yeah, and shooting the ball better. My God. Mm-hmm. His last three games for sure. And, you know, overall, you know. It's funny, you look at Joel Embiid and the difference he makes out there on the floor on both ends. Tobias Harris, not the defender that you want, but he just has a way of floating around the perimeter and finding that little space where he can get a pass from Ben or Joel or what have you to get clean looks. They just were not falling for a while there, but finally they are falling. He only shot three threes this game, but still was 7-11 from the floor.
I like 4 or 5 from the line.
Yeah,
I like
a few and ones as well in the paint. But interesting question. I thought John Clark asked Brett Brown regarding Joel Embiid. Is that was there ever a time where he kind of willed his way into the lineup when he didn't want to sit for like a load management? And Brett was quick to shoot that down, but he didn't like the question. But
Brett didn't like any of the pregame questions today.
But I felt like that's something we all thought in the past, particularly in that game when he had the torn meniscus against Houston Rockets.
That was a
nationally televised game. Yeah. Of course, if those that remember, James Harden had a 60-point triple-double, but I just feel like that was one of those games where he kind of was like, hey, I'm playing. But
I mean, I don't want to get too conspiracy theory on you, but I also feel like perhaps the league put pressure on the Sixers
because they had set him too much.
I don't know. I don't want to get too deep into that.
You know what? We can pivot off of that because according to reports, the league is considering lessening the number of games teams play.
Do it.
They're to at least 78, maybe 79, but less than 82. They're also considering reseeding the semifinals, the final four of the NBA playoffs, so that there's a chance that it could be two Eastern Conference teams in the finals or two Western Conference teams in the finals. And also something I do not understand.
I don't really love that, to be honest with you.
We'll touch on that in a second, but they're also considering having a in-season tournament between November and December where all 30 teams was like some type of financial incentive for like coaches and players. I don't quite understand that, but they're trying to make it like mimic it from the soccer model.
Yeah, I don't love that either.
But talk about the reseeding of the postseason. I thought 1 through 8, like the 16 teams that make the playoffs, then you reseed those 16 so that you're not getting, you know, the two Portland and San Antonio, who both had great records, like in the second round.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I honestly don't have a great reason for not liking it. I just don't like it. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right to have, like if the championship's, like, the Lakers and Clippers, and, like, that just is weird to me. I don't really particularly.
It would be weird.
It would be great. Don't get me wrong.
We have clamored in the past, though, like, when, you know, Golden State and, like, L.A. or Houston or whatever meet in, like, the Western Conference Finals, but they're waiting to play like a team who they would dominate.
That also means they play like all 9 o'clock games in the finals, and that would suck.
No, you're taking it. You're thinking about yourself.
You're right. I'm selfish.
I don't know. I want them to think it through. I want them to get, you know, to the crux of it and try to sell me on it before I shoot it down. I don't know what the need is at this point, and this supposedly wouldn't happen until the 2021-22 season.
They just need to play less games. They just need to play less games, less back-to-backs.
Because that eliminates load management.
Yeah, exactly. Less back-to-backs, because back-to-backs are brutal. Like you just said, like, Miami getting in late from Chicago. Like, I don't think people realize that sucks. You know what I mean? Like, you just played a basketball game, then you go right from the locker room, right to a bus, then hop on a plane, then go fly to another city and sleep in a hotel room for like, what, 4 or 5 hours, maybe 4 hours if you're lucky. And then you got to go to start getting ready to play a basketball game. It just sucks.
Sixers, one of only 4 teams in the NBA still undefeated at home. They are 7-0 at home now.
I thought it was 6. I could be wrong.
6-0 at home now. But nonetheless, a win is a win is a win. Paul, what are you working on for the website?
So we definitely are going to touch on Jimmy Butler and, you know, some of his postgame comments. Not that he had that many. Definitely going to talk about Josh Richardson. My favorite moment might have been when, because he was asked pregame if this game meant anything more. He kind of jokingly got angry at the reporters, like just messing around, said like, no, like stop asking me kind of thing. Like just like, but like was lighthearted, but said that. And then when he was asked postgame, first question was, like, okay, but was it really? He had the biggest smile on his face and said, Nah, just another game.
He was wet from outside.
No, he definitely enjoyed that. And then I think, you know, I definitely want to touch on Joel and Ben and the defense, the starting five, and all that. I think, you know, these are things we're going to be touching on over the next couple of days.
Yeah,
for sure.
They were suffocating. It was a beautiful game to watch. I am off Monday, and I will happily be watching this Raptors game, and I'm sure the Sixers.
Oh, yeah, enjoy your day off.
You have your days off. You're off tomorrow.
Do I? Am I?
Well, no practice for the Sixers on Sunday.
But am I off, Dan?
So, Sixers are flying. I talked to Zoo, and he, season ticket holder for the Eagles is Zoo, and he's upset because, you know, obviously he can't go to the game, but they're leaving. Their flight leaves during the Eagles game, so he's a little frustrated
can't,
like,
watch
about that.
It. That's frustrating.
I'm sure they'll pull it up on the plane, but.
Yeah, he's Zoo.
Yeah.
You can get that worked out.
Very quality gentleman, Mark Zumoff.
Indeed.
We want to thank Pickup Truck Chuck, Steve Graham, for staying up late with us to record this podcast. For Paul Hudrick, I'm Danny Pommel. Thanks for listening to Sixers Talk. We will see you next time. Wilmington University, Wilmu Works, all of you, our sponsors. Thank you.